now 6 p.m.
Thank you very much, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday, January 12th edition of the Arroyo Grande City Council. Can we get a roll call, please?
Certainly. Council Board Member George?
Here.
Council Board Member Sorton?
Here.
Council Board Member Barnett? Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Paulding?
Here.
Mayor Chair Ray Russell?
Here. Would you please silently join me in a moment of reflection? Thank you. And would you also silently join me in the flag salute? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. Item 5 is our agenda review. Does anyone have any reason to reorganize what little is on the agenda this evening? All right, then we will proceed as published, and I will toss this over to our city attorney for announcement of closed session actions.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. At the December 8th, 2020 regular meeting, the Council held a closed session for a conference with legal counsel to consider initiating litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D4. And to consider one potential case. There's nothing to announce.
Thank you very much for that. Item 5B, I will, for brevity, move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
Councilmember Barnett seconds that.
Thank you. Any discussion? Okay, we have motion by Mayor Ray Russom and second by Councilmember Barnett. Can we get a roll call, please?
Certainly. Council Board Member George?
Yes.
Council Board Member Storton?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Paulding?
Yes.
And Council Board Member Barnett?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Russom?
Mayor Russom, yes.
Excuse me.
That takes us to item 6. This is special presentations. Our first one, 6A, is our regular standing update regarding countywide COVID-19 efforts, and I will turn this over to City Manager McDonald.
Thank you very much. We have a few updates for everyone this evening, and I think I'll go ahead and ask AGP to let in the Five Cities Fire Authority attendee as one of our panelists, and Chief Steve Lieberman from the Five Cities Fire Authority is going to be joining us for this discussion as well. But I will go ahead and start off with just a brief update on the reporting of our county's ICU capacity. Folks may have seen reported in the Tribune yesterday that the county has made a change to the number of ICU beds that are being reported for our county. I believe the state will likely be using this updated number. To date, or historically, we had been using the number 53. So the idea was we had 53 ICU beds in our county. After discussing further with our officials with our hospitals in the county, it was determined that that number, to be accurate and to make it clear that we may have 53 actual physical beds, but we don't currently have the staff in our county to actually use those beds because there aren't the personnel needed to make sure they're staffed properly. So that number was revised downward. So at this point, we really only have a total of 38 ICU beds available in our county. The county has also started making it a little easier for everybody, or a lot easier for everybody, to get a current and accurate number of ICU capacity in our county. It's on their readyslow.org website. They are now reporting the total ICU capacity at 38 beds, identifying the number of beds that are currently in use, and then giving us a percentage capacity that remains. They're also identifying, in a way, kind of have to read between the lines a little bit, the number of ICU patients that are actually in Marion, down in Santa Barbara County. So those bed numbers, because they don't count against our ICU capacity because they're not actually in our county, but they are our patients from our county who are being treated down at Marion. So some of that information is now available online as well. And then I'll kick off a brief discussion about vaccines. I know there are a lot of questions out there, and we're starting to get a little more information from our county locally, because the decisions kind of filter down from the federal government to the state and then down to our county health officer about the way that those vaccines are rolled out. We are currently in phase 1A of the vaccine distribution. That means that people who are in healthcare workers or community healthcare workers are currently receiving the vaccine. The county is administering vaccines themselves out at the county health agency in San Luis Obispo, and I believe our local hospitals are administering them as well to their own staff. And from there, I'll kick it over to our fire chief, Steve Lieberman, to talk a little bit about the work that he's been doing with our local jurisdictions to plan on some additional vaccine distribution, and talk a little bit more about the work that our team has been doing round the clock for the last few weeks. So maybe I'll kick it off. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, thank you, Ms. McDonald. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Steve Lieberman, your fire chief. I am part, excuse me, long day, just ran in the house. I am part of the county's Type 3 Incident Management Team. Typically, a team like this is deployed, although we're known as an all-hazards team. Typically, you see us at fires in the county. If there was an earthquake, a flooding incident, anything of significance is typically when a team is called, when a local agency has exhausted their ability to manage an incident. This is the first time we've been asked to be part of a public health emergency. And the county approached the team incident commanders and asked us to stand up the team to design a plan to support three pods. Those are points of distribution. You may remember the public point of distribution drill we do every other year at the South County Regional Center. We were asked to come up with a plan to support three of those and be able to deliver up to 1,000 immunizations a day per site, so a total of 3,000 per day. The team met on December 30th. A letter of expectations was executed between the team and Dr. Penny Bornstein, the public health officer who's known as our agency administrator. And Dr. Bornstein basically drew a box with expectations and goals for the team to design a plan, a sustainable plan, and then to help staff and manage the plan for a period up to June 30th of this year. So the team's been working diligently. Our first deadline was Monday. We submitted a draft of the plan to our agency administrator, Dr. Bornstein, and her subordinate staff. We have a formal presentation tomorrow at the county building. Our plan was, we were told to have a plan designed to implement on Monday the 18th. So a few kinks to be worked out, little things like freezers, temperature-controlled freezers for the immunizations at remote sites, working through a few things like that, but I believe the team has done what they had to do. Construction is finishing up at the Paso Robles Fairgrounds, and it's about to start at Arroyo Grande High School. You know, we typically use the regional center, but for a number of reasons, including it being the current home of a warming center, and also the sheer number of vaccinations that we had to plan for. Lucia Moore was kind enough to allow us to use the gymnasium at Arroyo Grande High School and that front parking lot while school's not in session. The team will be ready for Monday, but ultimately it's really important to know that our immunization rates and what we're able to do for our community is going to be driven by the amount of vaccine that's made available to the county. So we're prepared to give 3,000 shots a day, but it's really going to be dependent on the amount of inventory through the supply chain that comes to the county. I'll take a breather there and see if there's any questions.
All right, let's just ask the council, and for lack of a better order, let's start with Mayor Pro Tem Paulding. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Mayor, and I appreciate that thorough report, both from our city manager and fire chief. I guess the question that I'm sure everybody is thinking about is, where are we at in terms of getting the inventory that we need in terms of supply of vaccines?
So that's that's the $1 million question, and that's a question that the team can't answer, right? We were given parameters on as to how to plan and deliver, but ultimately it's going to be the supply chain coming through the federal government to the state, and then how the state allocates to the counties. I asked, just from an educational perspective, I asked public health to explain to me how it works, and it's not a clear-cut formula-driven solution that gets allocations to us. I believe that Governor Newsom's announcement with Vaccinate 58 from last week and the establishment of these very large sites for mass vaccinations are going to ultimately impact the amount of vaccine we see in the short term in San Luis Obispo County. We will begin vaccinations next week. Not sure of the number and the sites as to where the vaccinations will be given. But again, Councilmember Paulding, I wish I could give you more information, but it really depends on what the allocation that's awarded to the county is on a weekly basis.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that response.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Councilmember George, any questions?
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Chief Lieberman, I don't know if you'll be able to answer this question. I'm just planting a seed. So today, the federal government announced that instead of waiting and saving the doses for the second dose, they're saying to give them out as first doses, and the supply chain will follow through and give us enough doses for the second dose later. So my question to you is, has the county discussed that at all? And they also had talked about dropping the age from 75 down to 65. So those are two questions that a citizen had brought up, and I just wanted to address those.
Thank you so much for the two questions that I can't definitively answer for you. Number one is, we're well aware of the media reports of the Fed saying, forget about the second shot, let's just administer as many as we can. We made sure in our briefing with public health today that they were well aware of that, and they are.
Right.
And as far as tiering, last week, I know Mr. Robeson was on this call, there's a task force, a vaccination advisory task force with 30 members, and I was covering for one of the other fire chiefs. And it was a conversation that Dr. Bornstein is very supportive of, trying to get public feedback, whether it's elected officials, business people, or citizens at large, about how to tier and prioritize who gets shots and when they get shots. I will say that if you haven't gone to readyslow.org in a few days and you click on the vaccination information link, there is a very basic timeline showing that I'm looking at you, phase 1A, which we're currently in, phase 1B, phase 1C. Those two will be kind of interconnected, because you look at it in terms of what I call continuity of governance or continuity of operations for a private sector. So how do we keep the economy spinning? How do we keep wastewater and drinking water systems safe? All of those things, right? And then balance it with the vulnerable population. So you'll see that phase 1B and 1C are kind of intertwined, because you'll see a meeting, an intersection with those two phases, saying, well, we need some essential folks vaccinated, but we also need to start taking care of our vulnerable population. And then phase 2 would be more of the public vaccinations. Staring at this site currently, I see that phase 1B has a tag saying it's expected to begin in February. And the way public health is describing phase 1B, they're talking about adults over 75 at this time.
Thank you, Chief. I just had one last question, because it was a little vague on the website as far as the county site. It was clear on the state site, but where do teachers fall in within these phases?
Great question. from what I've learned, is the tiers, there's guidelines that come from CDC, and then there's tiers established at the state level, but I believe that local government has a chance to reprioritize those existing tiers, and that's what this advisory task force is working with Dr. Borenstein on, so I don't have an answer for you. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's okay. Thank you very much, and those were my only questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Storton, any questions?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Just one. Thank you, Chief, for the report. I was just curious, from my law enforcement perspective, I was just wondering, as these pods get established, what kind of security protocol are there just to make sure that not only people are safe, but the vaccine is safe?
Great question, and something that we're very focused on. So Commander Stuart McDonald with the Sheriff's Office is one of our three incident commanders. So he brings that expertise with them. We also have a commander from the Paso Robles Police Department on the team, and they're working with all the local agencies to coordinate security planning. What I believe the consensus from the police chiefs has been is, why don't you retain private contract security for on-site security and just work with local law enforcement agencies requesting extra patrol to keep an eyeball on the site during business hours. From a team perspective, we're very supportive and aggressive in making sure that there's a registration system used and it's not a first-come, first-served based on the experiences we've seen around the country. But ultimately, that will be a public health direction.
Get the answer.
Councilmember Barnidge, any questions?
Just one, a quick one. Might not have the information now, but I talked to a citizen today that is gleaning their information. They're over 70, and they're gleaning their information from the Tribune. And the last article they saw in there about the vaccines really didn't have any information for them. So if someone is not on social media, how does the county know yet how they're going to alert these people that are in the next group? And how, I mean, if you don't have people, senior citizens, going to the doctor and they're at home and a little bit disconnected, how do they plan on rolling this out?
It's a great question, and one that we've raised. You know, the team does have public information officer coverage on it, but ultimately we're supporting the health department in the county and working with the county's lead PIO. I think that might be a question that perhaps your city manager could raise in one of her conversations. I do, you know, I've got a mother-in-law who's in her 80s and needs this vaccine, is very interested in getting in line as soon as possible. There is a button on ReadySlow.org now where you can subscribe to emails, updated emails from public health. And while I don't expect seniors to necessarily care about social media, maybe subscribing to the email once and just getting it with information would be helpful to them.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. I have a few questions. The first one is with regard to the site that's going to be at Arroyo Grande High School. I am grateful that all the agencies are working together, and especially the school district. And I'm sure that, you know, many people don't realize that the city has no control over the school district, so that requires a partnership, so I'm really happy about that. However, to answer Councilmember George's question, I believe educators are in Tier 1B, and that's at least what I'm being told. So also, this is not Lucy Amar, but in the school district I work in, we're planning to be back at work March 1st. So let's pretend that that happens and that we're largely able to get kids back in classrooms by March or even April. If the goal is to have these up through June, what is the backup for Arroyo Grande High School, because that will no longer be available once they go live?
Yeah, great question. We took that into consideration when our folks were talking about site agreements with the district. So both Arroyo Grande High School and the current central location at the public health campus in San Luis Obispo potentially will become non-viable, right? Kids will come back to school, or the DMR district will give us a couple weeks heads up, and our backup plan would be the regional center. Not our place of preference, but a place that we can make it work. In San Luis Obispo, if the health campus becomes too constrained on Sierra Way, the backup plan is Cuesta College. So the team's taken a lot of those contingencies into account.
Maybe with the weather, maybe we won't need a warming center by the time we have to switch over. So maybe that'll all work out. Okay, now my next question is with regard to the staffing of those. I'm hearing in my mayor's call that there's two main stumbling blocks. One is the availability of the vaccine, but also the availability of people who are qualified to administer the vaccine. So where are we at with that, and especially in terms of potentially needing to use the alternative care site?
Great question. And actually, I have some positive news to share about that. The first was to be a paramedic in our county and be able to give a vaccine, you needed to be currently accredited, which is basically a local licensure. They've relaxed that and to say as long as you have a state paramedic license. So maybe you haven't been practicing as a paramedic in a while, but you have a state license, you can go through refresher training and become a vaccinator. Also, the Five Cities Fire Authority provides basic life support emergency medical services, or EMTs, and the state just granted emergency approval for our EMTs to be trained as vaccinators as well. So we have a number of people, whether it's my pharmacist Johan at Rite Aid who wants to help and volunteer, or folks that are recently retired, encourage them all to go register for the Medical Reserve Corps at the Public Health website.
Thank you. And finally, maybe this is for City Manager McDonald. This is honestly, I'm going to phrase it as a question, but it's a comment, I'll be honest. I've been watching Governor Newsom, and I've been watching the push for these super centers for being able to get vaccinations in a whopping three places, San Diego, Los Angeles, and Sacramento. And my response to that is, what about us? Like, they're completely forgetting the coast. And I heard you say, or at least I think I heard you say in your opener, that may also impact the vaccine availability if the priority is going to the big centers. So, as I said, I'm going to ask you to comment on that, but that's really more of, or answer the question, that's really more of a comment on my part of my frustration at Sacramento just doesn't seem to even know we're here.
So maybe, I'm happy to just, I suppose, hear and express, you know, an understanding of that level of frustration. And I think that's sort of, at least we know and we're hearing from our fire chief that there is an effort occurring locally to make sure that we are able to actually administer all of the vaccines that we are provided. All I could imagine, and this is really just me and my initial thoughts about, you know, perhaps why, at least to some degree, you know, if there's a focus on LA and San Diego, we know that they are incredibly hard hit, particularly with their hospital capacity, and there may be a desire to try to just focus energies, but that doesn't really help us much, and I certainly hear and understand the frustration, and I think we're trying to do what we can to make sure that at least on our end, we're ready and able and capable of administering everything that we are provided, and then as well to take up any advocacy efforts that we can make through the connections we may have whenever we're provided an opportunity. So I think that's about as much as I possibly can say, I think, at this point. I don't know if Chief Lieberman has any more thoughts on that issue as well.
I think you had a fabulous response.
Well, thank you to you both, and thank you to your efforts, Chief Lieberman, in terms of getting this stood up as fast as possible, because what I would like to see is us get to the point where we have no more to give, so that we can start screaming, because we really can't start screaming until we get all those out into the arms of the people who, literally, into the arms of the people who need them. So I look forward to the squawking that's going to happen hopefully in a few weeks when we run out, if we're able to stand up those three sites as planned. So let's go ahead and open up public comment, check in with AGP and see if there's anyone who would like to speak.
If anyone would like to make a comment, please use the raise hand function. If you're calling in by phone, please dial star 9. I see one comment, Chris Rodebush.
Hi, yes, good evening. Greetings and Happy New Year from the We Are the Care Initiative. My name is Chris Rodebush. As we begin 2021, we are starting a new chapter for the initiative and are looking forward to a reinvigoration of our work. This new stage has been inspired by the tenacity of our child care professionals in the child care field in our community in the face of COVID-19. The pandemic has affected child care centers and family child care homes detrimentally. But our child care professionals continue to persevere and put the children and families of Slo County first. 13% of licensed programs are currently inactive or providing distance learning only due to COVID. A recent survey found that programs are operating at 76% of licensed capacity as a result of group size limitations and underattendance. Programs in our community have been forced to drastically adjust their day-to-day operations, utilize funds from razor-thin budgets to purchase more cleaning products, and introduce even more stringent sanitation guidelines, all while staff are putting themselves and their families at risk each day. These programs are also a large part of our small business community, but they are not always recognized in the same light as small retailers, restaurants, or local small businesses. Child care is absolutely an essential service and is in need of our support. And the We Are the Care Initiative is excited to announce multiple opportunities to get involved and help. First, a child care supply drive is running through January 27th at all CESLOC branch locations. Please consider contributing gloves, disinfectant wipes, no contact thermometers, cloth masks, hand sanitizers, etc., to directly support child care providers. Second, We Are the Care Initiative will be hosting a virtual 2021 New Year kickoff event on Thursday, January 21st from 6 to 7 p.m. Join us for an overview of the initiative and its four task forces, a celebration of our many We Are the Care wins from the past 20 months, and an update on the first phase of the countywide child care study. We value our community and hope to utilize the many strengths of its members from every background. Thank you so much for your time. As always, we will be back soon with more updates. If you want to join on January 21st or get involved with We Are the Care, please contact First 5 San Luis Obispo County or find more information on our website, www.first5slo.org. Thanks so much.
Thank you for that. I'm sorry that I did not make clear that we're taking public comment on the COVID issue. So we'll count that as public comment for item 7. So just reminding future speakers, we're talking about item 6A at this time. So if anyone has comments about the countywide COVID-19 efforts, go ahead and raise your hand.
Madam Mayor, there are no more raised hands.
Thank you. So I'll close public comment, and this is a receive the update. So we'll move forward to item 6B. This is City Manager Communications.
Thank you very much. Just a few items to note as an update from me this evening. Wanted to let everybody know, give you a little preview of our January 26th agenda. We have a couple of items that may be of interest to your council as well as the public. The first is we will be bringing forward our housing element update for adoption by the council. We've received conditional certification of our proposed element by HCD, the Housing Community Development Department of the state, back at the end of December. And so we're excited to bring this forward. Our Planning Commission held a public hearing on Tuesday, January 5th, where they considered the final proposed housing element and recommended adoption. So we'll be bringing that forward for your review and hopefully adoption at that time. From there, we send the element out to back to HCD for their final review, at which point they hopefully will certify it and we'll be all tied up on that end. The other item I wanted to let everybody know about is we will be bringing forward a discussion of the Briscoe interchange project. It is including a an item we're going to be requesting authorization to send out bids to do some design, additional design work, as well as consider adoption of our environmental documents. And then because both of those actions are predicated on the idea that we still definitely want to move forward with the project alternative, that's going to be a bigger discussion that will be available for council to bring forward and have fully at that point. So I wanted to let everybody know our Briscoe project is coming back before council at our next meeting in January. And then finally, just wanted to take a moment to speak to an issue that I'm sure a lot of people have been thinking about and maybe concerned about, really in light of the events that occurred in Washington, D.C. last week. We have been receiving a number of questions, concerns from the public regarding safety in general in our city here locally, especially as we lead up to the inauguration that's scheduled to occur next week. And so our police chief, Martinez, is also available here to speak to that issue and answer any questions that your council or the public might have on that issue. We just wanted to make sure we made everybody available to let everyone know. This is something that our law enforcement has been looking at very closely. We're coordinating as well with our local law enforcement partners and the Sheriff's Department. And then from there, FBI, local FBI offices as well. Just wanted to let everybody know this is something that has, you know, our law enforcement agency is taking very seriously, and that our community's public safety is incredibly important to us. So just wanted to open that up and let you know that our chief is here to answer any questions or concerns that you all might want to speak to, as well as the public. So that's it for me.
Thank you. Can you take a second to comment on the status of the safety upgrades that we're doing at City Hall? We, public and us, haven't been in the building for a while, so maybe you can let us know how far along we are on that and making sure that staff is safe.
Absolutely. Thank you. So we have started implementing the measures at City Hall. Right now, we've actually installed a portion of those measures, including some glass barriers at our front counter. And so the next step is to actually remove a portion of a wall and build in a new doorway. That's going to be happening fairly soon. Our assistant city manager and public works director, Bill Robeson, is also available. He may have more detailed updates on that. But one thing to note is that our city hall is closed to the public because of COVID, and so our doors are locked unless you are staff with a key card and able to get in that way. So at this point, I don't think anybody is going to be able to see or take advantage of our new glass barrier. I will say they look fantastic. And so I'm personally just very happy with the progress we're making.
Thank you very much. Let's check in with council and see if anybody has questions. Councilmember Storton, any questions?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I just, for Chief Martinez, since he's here, I think it would be great if he could just provide us with kind of an overview of maybe discussions he's had with his counterparts throughout the county as far as just thoughts and plans for the current climate. I imagine if there were some specific threats, they'd be dealing with it. But in general, I think just something that could provide some calm to the citizens and let them know that our officers are out there and taking care of us, and just maybe just a little overview. Thank you, Chief.
No problem. Thank you. Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. Yes, like City Manager McDonald mentioned, this is a topic that we are taking very serious countywide. I have been involved in some discussions, and we will continue to be discussing this with our local law enforcement partners, including the Sheriff's Office, about preparing ourselves in the event that there are any type of either disruptions or civil unrest here occurring that may occur here locally. Again, the FBI office, our local FBI office, is involved in keeping an eye on the current climate, both through social media and just various outlets on any type of intelligence that may be coming forward. But at this point, I believe that we do have a very good strategy in place for in preparation for anything that may occur here locally. We have recently just discussed about a possible maximum deployment scenarios throughout the county with all of our local law enforcement agencies. So that will be another discussion that will be talked about in more depth tomorrow. I'll be participating in a countywide chiefs meeting to talk just about that. So I know that in the past with some of our other events that have occurred throughout the state with protests and what have you, the sheriff has sent resources out of our county. But in some of the discussions that I've had just recently, I think the goal here is to keep all of our resources here in county despite what may be occurring in some of the larger metropolitan cities. So hopefully that'll make some of the community members feel at ease that our resources will be staying locally in the event that we need to call on them.
Very good. Thank you very much, Chief. That's all I had, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Barnidge, any questions?
No, thank you.
Councilmember George?
I have no questions. Thank you. Thank you for being here, Chief.
Mayor Pro Tem Paldi, any questions?
No questions. Thank you for the update, though, Chief.
All right, let's go ahead and open up public comment on item 6B and see if anyone would like to ask a question or make a comment.
If you would like to make a comment, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
All right, thank you very much. So at this time, I'll close public comment, and that, again, is just a receive comments or correspondence, so we have done that. That'll take us to item 7. This is community comments and suggestions, and this is the chance for you to speak on items, for the public to speak on items that are not on tonight's agenda, and we're going to hold you to 3 minutes as always. So if you would like to speak on item 7, items that are not on tonight's agenda, let's go ahead and open up that public comment at this time.
Again, if you would like to make a comment, please use the raise hand function. If you're calling in by phone, please dial star 9. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. So I will close public comment and we'll move forward to item 8. This is collectively the consent agenda, items 8A through 8L. And let me check in with the council to see if anyone would like to pull an item for question, comment, or separate consideration. Mayor Pro Tem?
No items to pull, no questions on the consent agenda. Thank you, Mayor.
Councilmember George?
I just had a comment on 8E, please. Thank you, Mayor.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a comment as well on 8E.
And Councilmember Storton?
Thank you, Mayor. I have none.
Okay, and for me, I have I have a comment on 8E. I'm sure you can all figure out where we're going with that. 8J and 8L. So I have a question on 8L. So with that, let's go ahead and do our comments. We'll take those in order. So for 8E, Councilmember George.
Thank you. I just wanted to take a moment to thank all of the applicants who had put in applications to be on these commissions. It's a very rewarding job that not very many people know about. And so I just wanted to take some time to thank the people who are putting their time and energy into serving on our commissions. They're very important for our community, and I encourage in the future other people to also try to apply as well. That was it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Barnidge.
Don't have a lot more to add. I want to echo Councilmember George's statements about thanking everyone for applying, and especially during COVID, because it's the whole whole Zoom thing, which can be a little intimidating if you haven't been on a lot of Zoom meetings. So I really appreciate people stepping up and continuing to serve. So that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And for me as well, the only thing I will add to that is I want to thank all three of, or all three for each of us, of the people who are going to serve for two or four more years. Just a very quick correction. Mrs. Hall is a reappointment, not an appointment. She has been serving in the last term as well. And I also just want to make sure that the people there know how important that the job that they're doing is to this council and the workings of this council. They do a lot of heavy lifting, especially on Planning Commission, but even on ARC and the Traffic Commission. This is part of the decision-making process. We don't do it alone. We have advisors on these committees that help us out and do a tremendous amount of work. So I just want to say thank you for that. So 8J, I just wanted to say thank you to Peak Wi-Fi for coming forward on this issue of the repeaters, and the police department has been a long time coming to get this up and running. We have a long-term lease solution that scales, so I'm excited about this, and so I just wanted to say thank you, and I'm so excited that we're using a local company to be able to do this. And for me, for 8L, I did ask questions prior to the meeting. This is regarding the Castillo Del Mar Extension Project. So I think my question is probably best asked to Assistant City Manager and Public Works Director Robeson. So you could come live, Bill. I will navigate to the answer I got. I still want to be clear on the answer. So while you're getting ready, the question that I asked was, since we're proposing to move funds from the sales tax that cover the contingency funds, I'm still unclear as to why those funds would be sent to the annual pavement fund instead of back to the less restricted sales tax if they are not expended. The answer that I got was that the recommendation was to transfer it into the Castillo Del Mar project in the annual pavement management program. And so if that project doesn't use those funds, it would just default back to annual pavement management. Mm-hmm. I'm still unclear as to why we wouldn't move those back into sales tax funds so that we can utilize those in a less restrictive way.
Okay. Robin Dickerson, our city engineer, we all kind of collaborated, and I'd like her to come on the line and give a little bit of detail on that, if she would. I know that she was in the waiting room, so hopefully she'll come on in just a moment.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes. Thank you, Robin. We can hear you.
Okay. It's my understanding that those funds were slated for the annual pavement project. We're taking those funds and using them in the Castillo Del Mar project because of the paving. But if those funds are not used, we would return them back to the sales tax money that was allocated to our annual pavement projects.
Oh, okay. So let me rephrase in a way that makes sense to me, which is probably what you said, just making sure I understand. The local sales tax money had already been transferred to the annual pavement management program, and from there we're transferring it into the Castillo Del Mar project.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, yeah. Now I understand. All right, thank you so much. I appreciate that. You walking me through that not once but twice, Robin. I appreciate that very much.
Not a problem.
Okay. So with that, let's go ahead and open up public comment and see if there's anyone who would like to comment on items 8A through 8L.
If anyone would like to make a comment, please raise your hand now. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. Then I'll close public comment and bring this back around to the council for consideration and possible adoption of motion. Let's see if we've got comments. Councilmember Storton?
I have none.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Nope.
Councilmember George?
No comment.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
No comments.
All right. It seems that everybody's ready to go, so I'll go ahead again for brevity, and I'll make a motion that we accept the or that we approve the consent agenda items 8A through 8L.
Councilmember Storton will second.
Any discussion? Okay, City Clerk Porter, we have a motion from Mayor Ray Russom and a second from Councilmember Storton. Can we get a roll call, please?
Council Board Member George?
Yes.
Council Board Member Storton?
Yes.
Council Board Member Barnett?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Chair Ray Russom?
Yes. Item 9, public hearings, we have none. Item 10, old business, we have none. Item 11, new business, we have none. This takes us to council communications. Item 12, this is where the council gets to communicate with all y'all. So, as usual, I'll just for fun kick this right over to Councilmember Barnidge.
I got nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Anyone else have council member communications?
I have something real quick. I just want to say, in light of the recent events that are going on in our nation, I'm going to pretend that I'm talking to every single citizen and they're listening right now. But there's a lot of stress going on out there, and I just want to really amplify the importance of personal responsibility and personal calm during this time. We really need to rely on each other right now, and it's an important time in our lives. And I just want to stress how important it is that we treat each other fairly and in a way that's respectful. Think a little bit before you press send on that social media feed you may have been talking on, and just be conscientious of how important it is that we spread a little kindness and support to one another during these times. That's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember George, any comments tonight? Mayor Pro Tem?
No comments, but I will echo what Councilmember Storton said, and well said, much needed. Thank you.
And for me, I wanted to say something about that, so I'm very excited that Councilmember Storton did. I'm threw out my lesson plans for this week as we start school tomorrow to do lessons around what happened last week and the historic nature of what happened. It's really a challenge. But I do want to continue to remind the public that the way we get back to normal is by doing everything we can to wear our masks when appropriate, to socially distance, and to take this seriously. These numbers, we're starting to get a little desensitized to them. Months ago, when we would have 2 or 3 or 5 cases a day, and then we started to tick up over 20. And now we're getting to an average of, last I looked at the average, 187 a day. It's really easy to start just normalizing that. It is not normal. It is dire. And I am shuddering to think about the impact on our healthcare system with so few ICU beds. It takes one big traffic accident to really impact those numbers, and we need to take that seriously. So please, not only take care of yourselves, but take care of each other, both in civil discourse, as Councilmember Storton encouraged, but also in terms of your health, as I am encouraging you as well. Item 13, we have closed session. There is none tonight, so item 14 is adjournment. We have an extra short one tonight. I'm anticipating an extra long one in 2 weeks. So rest up, everyone. Take care, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Good night, everyone.